It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And love it if you'd go over to Facebook and like the Kim Munson Show. Greatly appreciate that. I am so excited about the show that we have planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines in this first segment. Segments 2, 3, and 4, our good friend Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, will be going through some important speeches and documents of the American founding. And we can use a little inspiration these days, and so I think you're going to really enjoy that. Steve, it's always, I'm always lucky to say thank you to this amazing team that we have, to you and to Patty and Zach and Keith and Charlie. Thank you for all that you do. And for each of you listeners, you're treasured, you're valued. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. If you're home right now, use it to do some spring cleaning. Be industrious, because we're coming out on the other side. The sun's coming up, and we're just taking one step to get through this kind of crazy time here in America. So, Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Very well. It's been a strange week, and you know, I guess I sit here in the chair, and now I kind of get enthusiastic for the show. Yesterday we did a lot of prep for it, and sometimes I get so busy I'm handling things and I'm hearing but I'm not really hearing. And you know, like for example, your Headlines of Hope podcast that you're now doing, I sent that out to a couple different people. I said, listen to this testimony of, you know, the key figure in that podcast, and got so many cool responses back. And I think this is the level of the type of programming that you're primarily responsible for, and it's just so darn good.
Well, and yes, we decided to do this. Patty said, you know, we have so many great stories with, I meet so many amazing people, and of course I've interviewed over 120 World War II veterans, and she said during this time, why don't we do something like that? So we started that Tuesday, and we're going to be doing that every day, a story, a headline for hope. And so yeah, they're pretty amazing stories. Of course, I would say a headline for hope is Ben Martin, who we're going to get to talk to here in segments 2, 3, and 4. But, you know, Steve, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. This has been such an interesting time. And I'm changing this just a little bit to say it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a panic, weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation. And we're going to be keeping a real eye on this freedom versus force thing, because I think that some of these politicians have really overstepped their bounds. And as we're walking through this, they've overstepped, but we need to make sure that they step back. And many times what happens is and Kimberly Strassel did this in one of the headlines, it was one of the headlines that Patty pulled, is that many times in these situations, government expands, but it forgets that it needs to step back. And so that's going to be our job, to make sure that it steps back as we get through this very interesting time here in America, Steve.
Yes. And, you know, again, you're totally, I mean, ultimately you're responsible for the content in the show, and that's a good thing. I won't want to be in your seat today because of there's so many things that we could be talking about, and yet the very first thing that Patty put on the document that she sends out is this incredible commentary. What do you call this?
I think it was maybe a letter to the editor or an editorial, and it's really, really powerful. And we're going to get to that in just a minute.
Okay.
A couple of things though. You mentioned our Headlines for Hope. You can go to my website. They're anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes, and then we also are starting another podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. And we've done our first two. One was with an economic historian and a co-author of the book with Larry Kudlow, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, The Secret History of America's Prosperity. And so we talked with Brian about that. And then yesterday, I talked with Rob Nadelson, constitutional expert and former constitutional law professor, about the lockdown here in Colorado and whether or not it's constitutional. And so that is sounding off with Kim Munson. So those are two new things that we've started to do.
Can I comment on that title, sounding off?
Sure.
Anybody who's ever met you knows that you are a kind, congenial, you know, bubbly, effervescent person. But sounding off is this has been your thing this last couple of days or weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be important stuff. So be sure and check that out. We're doing exciting things. Our inspiration and wisdom for today is James Wilson. And I chose him because Ben Martin has quoted him in some of the things that we're going to be talking about later. But he was one of the founding fathers of the United States and a signatory of the United States Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. Steve, both of them. I mean, can you believe that? That guy was right out there. So Wilson was elected twice to the Continental Congress, where he represented Pennsylvania and was a major force in drafting the United States Constitution. A leading legal theorist, he was one of the six original justices appointed by George Washington to the Supreme Court of the United States. He was also one of the 56 signers of the Declaration. He lived from 1742 to 1798. He died at the age of 55. Pretty amazing guy, Steve. So here we go.
What a life of service. Jeez.
I know. He says, law and liberty cannot rashly become the objects of our love unless they first become the objects of our knowledge. Amazing, isn't it? So one more time. I think you need that one more time. Law and liberty cannot rashly become the objects of our love unless they become the objects of our knowledge. And I hope as we come back through this, get through this, that people need to realize that we need to understand the American idea. You were going to say something, Steve?
Well, it's not going to be good. I'll warn you up front. The object of our knowledge, we are hurting so bad in the knowledge department. And man, that really hits home.
It really does. So with that, though, I kind of edited a funny. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Due to Governor Polis, Mayor Hancock, and Tri-County Health Bureaucrat John Douglas's lockdown of Colorado, I'll only be telling inside jokes. Ha!
Okay. Well, there's no drummer today because he was told to stay home.
Was he told? Oh, okay. There's a lot of that. So he's drumming at home, huh? So a couple of things. You be sure and sign up, Looking Into the Future, for our salon series, June 22nd, with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice, Three Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. We'll have that over at Water's Edge Winery. And then also Dee Dee Chisholm and Abby Sinnott, we've had both of them on. They are the founders of Bella Health and Wellness, and they would really appreciate some men's extra large cotton dress shirts. And so you can reach me, Kim, at kimmunson.com, and I can get you connected. What they're planning on doing is wearing a shirt over their uniforms, and after each patient, they'll just take that off, then they'll launder them so they'll be ready to go again. So, Steve, you and I wanted to get through this piece that Patty found from the Aspen Beat. It is by Glenn Beaton. It says, please don't destroy the country for me. It's really powerful. I know it touched you. It touched me as well. She said, or he said, I'm 64 and have a congenital blood disorder, and it causes blood clots, especially in my lungs. And twice it almost killed me. I have what the docs call an underlying respiratory condition. So save your sympathy for our country and our world, especially for younger people like my daughters. And then talks about the virus spreading around the world, and the, you know, the bans on travel and everything that's going on. And he said that older people like with underlying respiratory issues like me are especially susceptible. Roughly speaking, he might have a 20% chance of dying if he contracts the virus. A highly disproportionate number of the victims will be people like me. And to fight the virus, much of the world has shut down non-essential businesses. What do you think about that, Steve?
Well, I'm going to say something that really put me on thin ice. And that seems to be, and he's going to talk about it further down the line here, almost a fool's errand, and we'll explain that. in terms of what, you know, and you've seen other people ask the question, is the cure more dangerous than the initial problem? So, you know, carry on.
Okay, well, and he goes on to say, the shutdown of the worldwide economy was noticed by the stock market. It went down by about a third in the biggest monthly decline in history. And it's hard for businesses to make money when they're closed, you think? So the economy cannot stay down forever. Everyone outside the Bernie Sanders campaign knows that we cannot just print money to buy groceries, cars, TVs, and computers forever. Generating wealth requires work, the kind you can't do from home. Here in the world, apart from the political posturing, we look at cost versus benefits. In the time that the virus has taken 1,000 American lives, we've lost over twice as many to traffic deaths and several times as many to flu. Steve, why don't you comment on his next sentence there?
Well, he says, nobody says we should stop driving in order to save a single American life on the highways. Nobody even says we should stop driving in order to save 30,000 lives per year that we lose on the highways. So stop the demagoguery, or at least stop it on my account. I'll be extra careful.
And then his generation, my generation, he says, has had it easy compared to our parents and grandparents. After a lifetime of comfort, it's not too much to ask me and my old friends to avoid crowds, to wash our hands frequently, and to use hand sanitizer. If against all odds I still get the virus, I'll deal with it. If against even greater odds I die from it, I'll deal with that too. And then, Steve, I think that next sentence is really important, if you'll take that.
The one thing I cannot deal with is destroying the country I love, the world I cherish, and the opportunity for the next generation to similarly love and cherish.
And so reopen our country soon. Reopen your lives. Reopen the world. A hunkered down life is no life at all. And I find that somewhat inspirational. We'll be talking with Ben Martin in the next segment about generations that have put it all on the line, the American patriots, so that we can have all that we've had. And I find something so positive about this shutdown, and I think it's a gut check for all of us to kind of stop the busyness and get refocused on what really matters. I've seen families out walking. It's been really exciting. But another thing that we need to do is we need to understand our history. And I'm so excited to talk to Ben Martin when we come back. Before we do that, though, we really need to help our restaurants, our bars, and our taverns here in Colorado. With Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock's edict to close dine-in options for individuals, restaurant workers will face some lean times. Restaurants are getting creative, and Hooters Restaurants is a valued partner of mine and really support my shows. Let them know how much you appreciate their sponsorship by stopping by and picking up dinner to take home, or you can have Hooters wings delivered to your front door via one of the delivery services. Try their original wings or some of their delectable smoked wings, which have half the calories. Hooters Restaurants is adding curbside pickup for to-go orders, so you can order your food at order.hooters.com. It's a popular option. And as the Queen says, stay calm, carry on. We are Americans. Let's act like it. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business this month and will be reopening on March 31st, 3 to 8 p.m., Tuesday through Sunday. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Beginning March 31st, call 720-381-6663 to place your curbside to-go order or stop in to grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663. Or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We've got our new podcast there, Sounding Off with Kim Munson, as well as Headlines of Hope. And somebody that I just always get great hope from, I love my conversations with him, is my good friend Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, has a deep love of the American idea. And so once a month we are, last year we went through the Federalist Papers, which was awesome. This year we're going through important speeches and documents of the American founding. And so we're going to be talking about George Washington. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So this is very exciting. We're going to go through several of Washington's speeches. So why don't you explain to our listeners what we're going to be talking about today, Ben?
Sure, I'm happy to. Okay, today we're going to talk about Washington. This is as the commander-in-chief in the end of the war. The first presentation, we talked about George Washington and what he was doing as commander-in-chief in the first part of the war. And so now we've gone through the war, we're at the end of the war, and we're going to talk about the things he did. We've talked about before the things that he has done during the war, and those are great. The things that he did to show leadership throughout there and suffer hardship with his men as they suffered hardship, and all the things he did, he defined the word of the servant leader, and he's defined it for the Army, he's defined it for our country forever, and he is the model of what our presidency, what our politicians should be. They should be leaders, and they should be servants to the people, and that's the way the American Constitution and the idea of the American Republic was set up, and George Washington embodies that completely. So in this one, we're going to start today with the introduction that we continue with our 2020 program called, as you said before, Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding. And this is our second presentation entitled, Washington as Commander-in-Chief, End of the Revolutionary War. In this presentation, we are going to do the same thing as we did in the first presentation. We're going to focus on George Washington, the father of our country. And in this second presentation involves three events in which Washington was a key part. The first event happens with George Washington quells a rebellion among the officers of the Army on 15 March 1783. After they had won the Battle of Yorktown and the fighting had basically stopped, but before the Peace Treaty of Paris was signed on 3 September 1783. So that's really important, and this is one of the parts of our history that most people have never heard about before, a rebellion among the officers of the Continental Army under George Washington. The second event occurs after the Treaty of Paris is signed and the last British military forces are evacuating New York City, and that was on 25 November 1783. General Washington and his army triumphantly enter the city at its northern end and conduct a grand parade all the way down to the southern tip of the island of Manhattan, accompanied by the New York State Governor Henry Clinton. On 4 December at Francis Tavern, General Washington conducted his last military ceremony. And to quote a historian about this, few events in American history are as emotional, well-remembered, and so poorly documented as Washington's farewell to his officers. Again, this may be a part of American history that most of us don't know, but it's very key to understanding George Washington's character and what he did for our country. And then the third event, the last event, occurs in Annapolis, which is a temporary home of the American Capitol and the Confederation Congress at that time. And there, on 23 December, Washington shocks the Congress, the nation, and much of the outside world by resigning his commission and returning home to Mount Vernon. And we'll talk about King George's reaction, which is certainly worth revisiting. So that's the outline of what the program is going to be today. And with that, I'll start with the first event. Washington quells a rebellion of his officers 15 March 1783.
So what had happened?
After the battle, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Kim.
So what had happened? Explain to us. Why was there going to be a rebellion?
Okay, exactly. That's what I'm going to do. After the Battle of Yorktown, which happened in October of 1781, British General Cornwallis's unconditional surrender, George Washington then moved the Continental Army back to the vicinity of West Point, New York, to keep a close watch on the large British force under the command of Sir Guy Carleton that was still stationed in New York City. The American Army headquarters was located in New Windsor, which is just a few miles north of the Army's location in West Point in the vicinity of it. During this long period of waiting, which was approximately 18 months after the fighting had stopped, but before the Treaty of Paris was signed, the Continental Army grew considerably restless, wanting to get back to their homes and their families and to reestablish their farms and businesses. But they could not leave as long as the British kept such a sizable force in New York City. To make matters worse, the Army had not been paid. The Congress was bankrupt, and some of the more unscrupulous members of Congress were considering ways of not paying the Army for their past wages, nor for the retirement pay they had been promised. A conspiracy began to develop among some of the disgruntled Continental officers, as you can imagine.
Sure, absolutely.
An anonymous letter was circulated around the camp, anonymous, no identification on it, that was inviting all of the officers to a meeting on 10 March 1783. This meeting was against Army regulations and suggested the officers were acting to undermine George Washington and to take drastic action to obtain the pay and pensions that were due them. Now, the drastic action seemed to be that they were going to take the Army and move it out to the West and leave everybody else behind, defenseless against the British, in order to exact their pay from the Continental Congress. Now, this wasn't Washington's idea, and it really wasn't the officer's idea. There are a lot of unscrupulous forces undermining what was considered to be the order of discipline. And so George Washington became aware of the plan, and he immediately began to devise a way to stop the rebellion. He first canceled the illicit meeting on 10 March, and he rescheduled it for 15 March. He secured the support of the loyal officers there in New Windsor, and then he sent word back to Congress to inform them of what was happening. He also let it be known that he would not attend the meeting, and he asked General Horatio Gates, one of the people we think was involved in this conspiracy, to chair the meeting in his absence. This was pretty sly on Washington's part. So on 15 March is General Gates called to order the PAC meeting in, and get the name of this, in the Hall of Virtue, which was what the name was called of the headquarters there that Washington was in charge of. So they were stunned to see George Washington, General Washington, walk in and ask permission to speak. You see, he had already become what he was going to be, the greatest American. Washington then began to speak from the remarks he had prepared for the occasion. His words were short, but impassioned, beautifully inspiring, and they went straight to the heart of the matter. They are now known as the Newburgh Address. In essence, what George Washington made were three major points in this address. The first point, we are the servants of our country and its civil government. Very important established principle that George Washington did at that time and he had throughout his life. We are the servants of our country and its civil government. We, the Army, are the servants of our country and its civil government. The second point, as I have been for 7+ years, in this quest for your just pay, am your servant. That's the servant leader. And the third point that he makes is do not tarnish your honor and your glorious example. And here is an excerpt of his address. Gentlemen, by an anonymous summons, an attempt has been made to convene you together. How inconsistent with the rules of propriety, how unmilitary and how subversive of all order and discipline. Let the good sense of the army decide. My God, what can this writer have in his view by recommending such measures? Can he be a friend to the army? Can he be a friend to this country? Rather, is he not an insidious foe? That Congress endeavors to discover and establish funds for this purpose, for the purpose of your pay, they have been unwearied and will not cease till they have succeeded. I have not a doubt of this, but like all other large bodies, their deliberations are slow. While I give you these assurances and pledge myself in the most unequivocal manner to exert whatever ability I am possessed of in your favor, let me entreat you, gentlemen, on your part, not to take any measures which, viewed in the calm light of reason, will lessen the dignity and sully the glory you have hitherto maintained. In so doing, you will give one more distinguished proof of unexampled patriotism and patient virtue. And you will, by the dignity of your conduct, afford occasion of posterity to say, when speaking of the glorious example you have exhibited to mankind, had this day been wanting, the world had never seen the last stage of perfection to which human nature is capable of attaining. I mean, that just takes your breath away.
Oh, my gosh, I just got chills on that. We need to wrap this particular speech up. What would be the last thing that you would want people to remember?
This is the last paragraph of what he said. With these great words ringing in their ears, the audience, the officers were nonplussed. Then Washington employed his final step to move them to action. He pulled from his pocket a letter from a member of Congress addressing their commitment to the Army. As he read it, he uncharacteristically began to stutter and stammer. He then, with these words, withdrew reading glasses from his coat. Reading glasses. He said, "Gentlemen, you will permit me to put on my spectacles, for I have not only grown gray, but almost blind in the service of my country." As he read the letter to unlistening ears, many were in tears. From the recollection and emotions which flooded their memories of George Washington. With that speech, the rebellion ended. And that's the end of this part.
Oh, my gosh, Ben Martin, that is amazing. We're going to go to break here in just a minute. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, it's actually very connected to George Washington. You guys named the firm Presidential Wealth Management because of your love, I think, of our country. And then the phone number is 303-694-1600. 1600 is the address of the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I don't know if people have actually realized how connected you were to all of that, Jason McBride.
Well, thank you for pointing that out again, Kim. Yep, I remember hearing that we had to go through some hoops to get that phone number, but we were able to get it when we started.
So that is Presidential Wealth Management, 303-694-1600. Jason, I saw a headline yesterday that said we are now in a bull market. But we were in a bear market. I mean, what's going on out there?
Well, I don't like this very simple thing. You know, if we're down 20%, oh, that's a bear market. And then if we bounce up 20% off the bottom, oh, that's a bull market. I've never agreed with that moniker on such a very, very simple type of way to do it, just down 20% off the high. So I find no useful information in that whatsoever.
Okay. So what should people know today?
Well, Kim, I was going to entertain just a little bit, if you don't mind. My
sure.
Wife's sister-in-law, they were texting last night, And she said, I had kind of a rotten day and went into a long text about what her kids did to her yesterday, which is my niece and nephew who are 4 and 5 years old. You want to rehear the text?
I do.
Quite funny. She says, plus, the kids have seriously metamorphosized into tiny little devils. While I was in the shower, they broke into the office, destroyed a curtain, poured a bowl of peanuts down Joey's air vent, ripped open the screen on his window, and threw his toy dragon on the roof, and then tried to go out and get it. Then they went out front and started throwing rocks and dirt at a little boy next door who was trying to clean their car. I was only in the shower for 15 minutes, and that's just the beginning. But now I'm drinking some wine and cuddling on the couch, and I'm sure tomorrow will be a much better day.
So this is how isolation or sheltering at home is going for your sister-in-law, huh?
Yes, quite humorous. Those are a couple of cute little kids, but boy, they could sure get crazy, can't they, Kim?
Well, they can. I yes, they can. So
yeah. So well, real quick, as far as the market, yesterday was a good looking day as far as the points up. Unfortunately, one ingredient was missing, and that was trading volume. We did get a big up move, Kim, but we didn't see the type of volume that we've been seeing on the down days. So that worries me a little bit. I like the bounce we've seen off the bottom. A lot of times what a market will do is it'll, you know, come down, you get a bounce like this, you end up getting a retest of the bottom. It'll come back down close to it or undercut it even by a little bit, and then you get the attempted move back to the new high. So I do like some of the action I've seen in the markets going all the way back to St. Patrick's Day. I think there's been some constructive moves in the market. You know, I'm hopeful here. We're going to get a pullback this morning on the open, it looks like. We've had some constructive action. I sure would have liked to seen a powerful increase in volume yesterday on that big up move, and we didn't get that.
Well, you know, it is just really interesting times, but over the long term, it's important to sit down, assess your risk tolerance, get a plan. Highly recommend to reach out to you and your team there, Jason McBride at Presidential Wealth Management. You can go to our landing page together, Air Presidential, that's AIRpresidential.com, AirPresidential.com. I know all of you are working really hard over there. I'd recommend people do a discovery session with you.
Well, I don't think it can hurt, and right now we can do stuff over the phone, of course. I think that's the easiest way, but if you have questions, concerns, you know, give us a call and speak to one of our fine advisors. We have a lot of great men and women at Presidential that have good experience and can help you be a steady hand through these trying times.
Okay, so Jason McBride, excuse me, have a great weekend. Sorry about that. And we will talk to you on Monday.
Okay, Kim. Have a great show.
And we'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouth-watering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
The preceding sponsor is a valued partner of Kim Munson and is not affiliated with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. KimMunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And Steve, boy, I don't know what's happening to the voice today. Steve, you and stopped by Hooters last night, right?
I did. We did the order dot, what is it?
Order.hooters.com.
Yeah, we did that thing and went over. And it was funny. He had just come out of the kitchen and he saw me standing there. And he says, and he kind of looked at the little tab real quick. He says, "Are you Steve?" And says, "Yes." And I don't think I was in there maybe, you know, 10, 15 seconds at the most. And I wish I would have had the time to engage him a little bit in conversation. But he was kind of obviously had things going on here. Maybe there were a lot of people ordering, and it was just a cool way to go. Dinner's ready to go the second I walked in the door, and it was pretty darn good.
Well, fantastic. I really appreciate that. So, guys, Ben Martin, my voice is still a little tricky this morning. So let's go ahead and jump in here. Ben Martin, he is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger. And we're continuing through this next event, the Treaty of Paris and George Washington. Explain what's happening there.
Okay, great, Kim. And I hope your voice gets better there. I know everything's kind of rough here today. Okay, so this is the second event, and this is Washington's farewell to his officers. Now, this involves two events in one, and the first part of the event is Evacuation Day. Now, following the devastating losses at the Battle of Long Island on 27 August 1776, which we talked about in our first presentation of this program, George Washington and the Army retreated across the East River by benefit of a miraculous fog and favorable wind, which obscured the boats and the troops evacuating to Manhattan Island. On 15 September of 1776, the British flag replaced the American flag atop Fort George in New York City, where it was to remain until Evacuation Day, which is what we're talking about now. In the series of battles around Manhattan and West White Plains, the British troops eventually forced Washington's Continentals out of New York City and down through New Jersey, as we talked about the Battle of Trenton and Princeton. The last post evacuated in New York City were the river forts of Fort Lee and Fort Washington on the northwest corner of Manhattan on 16 November 1776. So that's November of 1776. For the remainder of the American Revolutionary War, much of what is now Greater New York was under British control. In mid-August of 1783, Sir Guy Carleton, the last British Army and Royal Navy commander in the former British North America, received orders from his superiors in London for the evacuation of New York City. Carleton gave a final evacuation date of noon of 25 November 1783 to the Congress, our Congress. Following the departure of the British, the city was secured by American troops under the command of General Henry Knox. Finally, 7 years after the American Army's retreat from Manhattan, General Washington and New York Governor George Clinton reclaimed Fort Washington on the northwest corner of Manhattan. And then they led the Continental Army in this grand procession, this march down Broadway all the way to the southern tip to the Battery. The evening of the evacuation day, George Clinton hosted a public dinner at Frances Tavern with George Washington in attendance as the guest of honor. They offered 13 ceremonial toasts for the 13 colonies and the United States of America.
That's so cool.
Evacuation Day. And most people don't know about that, but it was celebrated in New York, and it's still celebrated in New York, but not as grand as it used to be celebrated. But that day, 25 November 1783 was evacuation day. So
so there was a speech then, right?
What's that?
And what about his speech to his officers at that time?
Well, that's the second part. Now we're going to that. So the farewell. So this took place on 25 November, and then the farewell happened a week later on 4 September, again, at Frances Tavern. And Frances Tavern is still in existence today, and the room where George Washington gave this speech is still set up the way it was back then. It's called the Long Room. And so at that tavern, Frances Tavern, at Pearl and Broad Street, George Washington met with his officers for the last time to formally say farewell. The officers were assembled in the Long Room at noon. A few minutes after, the room was entered by George Washington. And his emotions, now this is George Washington that always kept his emotions in check. His emotions were too strong to be concealed, which seemed to be reciprocated by every officer present. After partaking of a slight refreshment, in almost breathless silence, the general filled his glass with wine and, turning to the officers, said, "With a heart full of love and gratitude, I now take leave of you. I most devoutly wish that your latter days may be as prosperous and happy as your former ones have been glorious and honorable." And after the officers drank some wine, General Washington spoke again. "I cannot come to each of you, but shall feel obliged if each of you will come and take me by the hand." General Knox, being nearest to him, turned to the commander-in-chief, who was suffused in tears, was incapable of utterance, but grasped his hand when they embraced each other in silence. In the same affectionate manner, every officer in the room marched up and parted with his general-in-chief. Such a scene of sorrow and weeping I have never before witnessed, and fondly hope I may never be called to witness again. So then he said, George Washington said, "Who that was not a witness could imagine that the most violent local prejudices would cease so soon, and that men who came from the different parts of the continent, strongly disposed by habit of education to despise and quarrel with each other, would instantly become but one patriotic band of brothers." Washington then walked across the room, raised his arm in a final farewell, and silently stood and strode out of the tavern. According to one French officer who had served under him, Washington was a foe to ostentation and vainglory, and who did not seem to estimate himself as his true worth, again speaking to his modesty and his moderation. The officers escorted General Washington from the tavern to the Whitehall Wharf, where he boarded a large barge that took him to Palace Hook, which is now called Jersey City, New Jersey. Washington would continue to Annapolis, where the Confederation Congress was meeting, and General Washington would complete his last duty as the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. So you see the passionate connection, the true love that he had for the people that served under him, his officers, and the words that he gave to them were just beautiful, but it were hard to get out because of all the love that he was feeling for them. And this again shows Washington as the servant leader that he was, that he embodied, that he set the example for all of our political leaders and our military leaders that come after him to follow his example. So that is the second of the three events that we're going to talk about today.
Okay, Ben Martin, let's go to break. When we talk about this, the American Patriots, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And these freedoms that they gave their last full measure of devotion to make sure that we have freedom during this pandemic that we have going on, this panic that's going on. A lot of our freedoms are being eroded, and we need to make sure that we protect those as we come back out of this. And hearing these stories, we realize we have a duty to do so as well. So, Ben Martin, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue with this third speech will really, I think, impact people. And this is our program we're doing once a month. This is brought to you by the Harris family. And it's the important speeches and documents of the American founding. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Appreciate it if you'd like us on Facebook. And thrilled to have on the line with me today, that is Ben Martin, a good friend, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger. And this is a program we're doing once a month throughout 2020, Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family, and greatly appreciate their partnership as well. So Ben Martin, it's so great to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here, Kim, and talking about this. I just wanted to make one point from the last show, just so everybody caught it in his speech. When George Washington first went to Boston to take command of the Continental Army, he saw a band of people that were fighting and having these internal frictions, the people from the New England states, the people from the middle states and the southern states were fighting. They were from different parts of the country. And what he wanted to make a point of there was that you instantly, when you came to be part of the Army and I got there, you became one patriotic band of brothers. So you put aside all the differences in the animosities that you may have had before, and you quit quarreling with each other, and you instantly became one patriotic band of brothers. And hopefully that's kind of what's happening today, is we're coming together as a country again and to fight this invisible foe that we have now, that we're capable of
right.
doing.
So we are capable
we will
of doing this.
Go now to the third event, and that's where Washington on 23 December resigns his commission to the Confederation Congress. This is less than 3 weeks later, after he had just given his farewell, Washington appearing before Congress, which was now meeting in Annapolis, Maryland, their state house. Washington gave official notice of his retirement as the commanding general of the Continental Army, saving America from the fate of many republics before that had turned to military dictatorship after they had won the war. Washington's words to Congress were these: "Mr. President, the events on which my resignation depended having at length taken place, I now have the honor of offering my sincere congratulations to Congress and of presenting myself before them to surrender into their hands the trust committed to me and to claim the indulgence of retiring from the service of my country. Happy in the confirmation of our independence and sovereignty, and pleased with the opportunity afforded the United States of becoming a respectable nation, I resign with satisfaction The appointment I accepted with diffidence, a diffidence in my abilities to accomplish so arduous a task, which, however, was superseded by a confidence in the rectitude of our cause. And if you remember, when Washington accepted this commission to become the Continental Army's commander-in-chief, he called it the glorious cause. He coined that phrase, which has been used forever and ever again about our revolution. The rectitude of our cause, the righteousness of our cause, Washington is talking about there, the support of the supreme power of the Union, and the patriotage of heaven. The successful termination of the war has verified the most sanguine expectations and my gratitude for the interposition of Providence. And the assistance I have received from my countrymen increased with every review of this momentous contest. So Washington there again claims no honor for himself. He just talks about his moderation and his modesty. That's diffidence that he gives when he first talked about, I don't think I have the ability to do this, but if you, Congress, ask me to do this, I will give all of the abilities I have to satisfy that requirement you have placed on me in the glorious cause. And so then he talks about, as we talk about here, he talks about the supreme power. He talks about the rectitude of our call. He talks about the patronage of heaven. And he talks about the interposition of Providence, which he's giving thanks to God for all of this, which, again, that shows his humbleness and what Washington was. He didn't take claim for this greatness for himself. He gave all of the credit for that to the people that served him and to God. And he said, while I repeat my obligations to the Army in general, I should do injustice to my own feelings not to acknowledge in this place the peculiar services and distinguished merits of the gentlemen who have been attached to my person during the war. Again, he's talking about the officers whom he just said farewell to 3 weeks ago. He said it was impossible the choice of confidential officers to compose my family. He didn't call them his staff. He called them his family. Should have been more fortunate. He said, permit me, sir, to recommend in particular those who have continued in the service of the country till this present moment as worthy of the favorable notice and patronage of Congress. I consider it. So he's giving credit to the people that worked for him, not taking credit for himself. I consider it an indispensable duty to close this last solemn act of my official life by commending the interest of our dearest country to the protection of Almighty God and those who have superintendence of them, meaning the Congress at this time, to his holy keeping. Have now finished the work assigned to me. I retire from the great theater of action. And bidding an affectionate farewell to this august body under whose orders I have so long acted, I here offer my commission and take my leave of all employments of public life. So that was his farewell to Congress and his resignation. And he did it in the same way that he accepted it, with moderation, with modesty, and with gratitude, and with diffidence that he was not really up to taking that great responsibility, but that he would do it to the best of his ability. And as we can see from history, he did it quite well.
Well, and he had a great faith in God as well. So we're just about out of time.
What's that?
Yeah. We're just about out of time, but when King George heard that...
Yeah, I'd like to...
George Washington, yeah, very quickly, tell us about that.
So Benjamin West was an American painter, and he was commissioned to the royal court of the king. He was the king's painter, was completing a famous portrait of the king in 1783. This is while all of this was happening. When King George asked Benjamin West, the American, he said, "What do you think General Washington will do now that the war is ending?" And Benjamin West said, "Your Majesty, I have heard that General Washington has resigned his commission and returned to his farm." King George was nonplussed, and after a pronounced silence said, "If he does that, he will be the greatest man on earth."
And with that, Ben Martin, we're out of time. This is our show, Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding, brought to you by the Harris family. We'll do this again next month, Ben. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kim.
Oh, okay, and our quote for today is, "Without liberty, law loses its nature and its name and becomes oppression. Without law, liberty also loses its nature and its name and becomes licentiousness." So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. This great unknown, and I don't want no one to cry.